Welcome to So You Want to Move to the Country and Raise Goats. This is a podcast about change. Change is all around us, and sometimes we're ready for it, and sometimes we're not. When it overwhelms us, well, we just want to move to the country and raise goats. This podcast features stories from people who have gone through change. We hope that their insights will help you better understand and deal with the changes in your life. I'm Peggy Koenig, and along with my co-host, Catherine Greiba, we chat with insightful people with interesting change stories. We hope you enjoy our podcast.
Today, we're really happy to welcome Carolyn Brookfield to the podcast. And Carolyn lives in Calgary and is a public speaker, a veterinarian, a researcher. She's an upcoming author and a small business owner. So extremely interesting person to talk to, Catherine. What were your thoughts when you were talking to Carolyn?
I was so impressed. You know, she is also a stand-up comedian. Amongst the list of accomplishments that you rattled off. And what was so interesting about Caroline is that she talked about that she was, you know, she's been diagnosed as having ADHD, knows that about herself, and approaches changes in her life without knowing what the end result is going to be. She just gets into it and sees what happens.
I know. I was really, really interested in our conversation with her because she doesn't overthink, the next step. She has a real confidence in herself and just jumps in and does it. And the whole stand-up comedian, I was just, that whole thing just frightens the hell out of me. and yet she said that she really enjoys it, and you don't have to be funny to do stand-up comedy, which I'm really intrigued with. Yeah,
I know. What I loved about Carolyn was her approach to risk, and I think our listeners will find it very interesting as how she frames approaching new things and how it really calms her and gets her ready to move into something that she's never done before. So it was just a thoroughly enjoyable conversation, and I'm really looking forward to our listeners having a listen to it.
Yes, me as well. So let's listen.
Today we're joined by Carolyn Brookfield. She is joining us from her home in Calgary, Alberta. And Carolyn, you're originally from Guelph. And I understand that you took your schooling in Guelph to become a veterinarian. How did that happen?
Yes, well, I was one of those rare people who, they're called Guelphites. So I was born and raised in Guelph. And ever since I was little, I loved animals and, you know, tried to take care of everything. I even had a fly hospital when I was like a little kid to try to save all the flies that would get caught in the window. And
oh my God.
That's kind of disgusting now when you think about it. I don't know if my parents knew about it. Maybe not. But because, you know, obviously with that sense of wanting to take care of animals, a veterinarian seemed like the logical choice. And I liked science as I got through high school and, did some volunteering. I really liked the problem solving aspect of becoming a veterinarian. And so that's what I did. So there was a time in high school where I wasn't sure about my decision because I was really drawn to the performing arts and to photography. And I thought, well, I don't think I have the talent to be an actress, and I don't want to live in a basement apartment my whole life. And I had no idea how to become a cinematographer, like zero clue. So, and ironically, becoming a veterinarian seemed like the easiest path.
So how long have you been practicing vet med?
I graduated in 1997, and what are we, 2021? Yeah. So it's 24 years.
Yeah. Okay, and so your path has taken a bit of an interesting, should I call it, curve? Do you want to explain to our listeners what you're doing now and what's motivated you to move in that direction?
Yeah, it's really exciting. So for the past 2 or 3 years, I've been focused on doing some public speaking. And that kind of came about. It's funny, the catalyst for that, or the seed for that, was planted when I had a corporate role with a large pet food company, and I was technical services. And so a large part of my job was presenting to large groups of people and technical information. And I realized that I really liked it and that everybody else seemed to really hate it. So, you know, that was kind of the seed that was planted. And then I had gone through and I'd had a few online businesses, and through the process of my second online jewelry business, I had a business coach, and she was amazing. And we did a bunch of the typical coachy type things. And it was through that process of self-discovery and really thinking about what do I love to do that public speaking came up again. And then I was like, well, what should I speak about? So I was thinking, like, I want to be a public speaker. And I'm a big fan of Tara Moore's book, Playing Big. I don't know if, are you familiar with that book at all?
No, I'm not. Either.
No, I'm going to write it on my list of books to read.
Yeah, she's fantastic. And her book, Playing Big, is all about, and it's, I believe, mostly for women. And it's all about, what I remember about it is a section in there where she says, you know, when you think about what you really want to do, a lot of times there's a little voice that says, no, that can't be it, but that is probably it. And so I resisted this idea of being a motivational speaker or some type of like energetic speaker, because I just wasn't really, it didn't seem gravitas enough, I guess, I suppose.
But Carolyn, can we go back just a little bit? Because, you know, you were a veteran, practicing veterinarian, and you had a number of businesses. You talked about an online business in jewelry as one of them. How did you get into that?
Well, I have ADHD, like legitimately. It's not like, you know, I have ADHD, which I discovered not in my 40s, so not that long ago. And so I always tend to follow these random threads. I'm actually pretty risk-taking and I'm pretty okay to jump into uncertainty. So with that background, my first business was trying to find vets for veterinary practices that had a vet on sick or maternity leave or something, because that's what I've done mostly in my career as a vet. It's called a locum tenens. And so I've been self-employed. It's like a contractor. So I go and work at a clinic for a day, a week, a month, and then move on. So I was getting a lot of calls for that saying, can you work? And I couldn't, and they were desperate. And so I thought, well, there's a business here. And that's what I first built my business, the first online business. And I realized sometimes there's a reason there's no competition, because at that time it just wasn't a service that people were willing to pay for. And, you know, it kind of puttered along, but it never really became super profitable. But I learned a ton, like built my own website, learned about digital marketing. And then in kind of a bit of frustration, but I really wanted to have a business. I wanted to be home with my kids, who were quite young at the time. And I thought, the service-based business not working, why don't I try a product? And so then I thought, what kind of product could I make? And originally I wanted to make customized leashes and collars, and I made some in my basement. Anyway, long story longer, I found this type of jewelry called snap jewelry that I really liked. And so I thought, well, I'll just build a business with this. So I did that for, I think that business ran for like 4 years.
So it sounds to me like you're really comfortable with change. In fact, you really seek it out. And I noticed on your website, you talk about you don't believe in the complacency of comfort. And does that really drive you?
Yes. So again, and I think a personality has a lot to do with it. I am quite comfortable with change in most aspects, and sometimes I'm not. And it's funny, I try to be really intentionally mindful about when am I uncomfortable with change, but I do seek change out. That's a more comfortable position for me. So even with my veterinary career, I've been mostly a locum, but I've worked, you know, like I said, in a pet food company, I worked in academia, I worked in research. I wrote a book for wildlife rehabilitators. I did wildlife rehabilitation. So even within the career, and that was one of the draws to me of the career, was I've done a variety of completely different things within the career, which it suits me. I do get bored easily.
So it's interesting to me, Carolyn, that you, when you first were making decisions about a career, you were looking at performing arts, you're looking at something more creative. And here we are, you eventually got there in a way as a speaker. That's pretty interesting. So is that, do you feel that you were always looking for that outlet for that artistic side, that creative side?
Yeah, I do. And I think that everybody does, honestly. And that's one of the fundamental tenets of what I'm trying to help people understand, is that we're all creative. And it doesn't have to be art or performance, but there's some creativity that's in us that needs to come out. And I see this time and time again with people in, you know, when they retire, they start painting, or, you know, it just is that there is this innate need for us to create. And in my case, it seems to be drawn towards like the performance arts. And through, you know, I've done some acting classes. I did improv. I've also started doing stand-up comedy about 3 years ago. So just trying to look, at the end of the day, we all sit in these boxes that people think we should be in because everybody else is in those boxes, but they're all in the boxes because we're in the boxes. So I feel like it takes some time to really figure out that you don't need to be in that box. It's your life and you only have one turn to ride these rides. So do whatever you want to do.
You know, I read an article once that talked about, and I don't know how they measured it, but they talked about that people are their happiest when they are doing something creative, whatever that is, whether it's baking or performing or speaking, it's creativity. And so what do you think holds us back from doing more creative things?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head there, Catherine, about the everyday creativity with the baking and building a pivot table and choosing your earrings. Those are all creative acts. And people often think that creativity has to be something artistic or something epic. So I think the language around creativity is sometimes a bit of a barrier. But then I think what I found in my career, especially in the sciences or, you know, somewhere where it's more kind of data, logic, you know, medicine, it really seemed random. Like I was a bit embarrassed of my creative pursuits because I felt like it somehow diminished the importance or the seriousness of the work that I was doing with medicine. And that's not the way it is. And that's not the way it should be.
You know, Carolyn, I'm quite intrigued by your move into trying improv comedy. If you want to talk about putting yourself out there and taking risks, what motivated you to do that? Because I mean, that to me, in my mind, like I just feel my stomach going cold just at the thought of it. So how did you get there?
Yeah, and that's what a lot of people say. And again, I realize that I'm a risk-taking personality, but it's really funny, Peggy, if you think about what's the risk if you do stand-up comedy?
That people don't like you or don't think you're funny or they don't laugh.
Yeah, but then what's the risk? Like you're not going to die. And that's one of the things I say. And sometimes I hear it in that voice of that, I think his name's Ken from The Hangover, that actor. There's a line in that movie. He's like, but did you die? And so, you know, I think that I channel that inner, I don't know the name of the character in the movie, whenever I do anything. And it was funny, one time I was going to perform stand up and I said, it was a large crowd. And I said to one of the other comics, you know, oh, I'm kind of nervous tonight. Or I said, but what's the worst that's going to happen? Nobody's going to laugh. And him and the other comic I was talking to, their mouths dropped open. And they said, that is the worst thing that would happen. Why would you say that? I'm like, well, I'm not going to die.
So do you think that's what holds us back, is that we haven't really thought out what really is the risk here and what is the worst thing that could happen?
Yeah, I think what holds us back is an evolutionary drive to survive. And historically, we were in small tribes and we had to fit in, we had to be accepted, or we were kicked out and we'd starve or get eaten by a tiger or whatever the case. So we have this strong, strong need for approval and acceptance. And I think it's visceral. And I think that we don't actually take our big brains that we evolved with to actually sit in that uncertainty and say, okay, what is the risk here? How am I going to mitigate this risk? Like, I could tell you a story that illustrates this point to me very well. Like, I went to, and I put this in the first chapter of my book, so I hope it's not a spoiler, but so I took my son to one of those virtual reality places for his birthday, right before COVID last year. And at the end of the party, all the moms came to pick up all their kids. And the owner said, do you moms want to try virtual reality? And I had already been playing, of course, for, you know, for the hour. And I was, you know, fighting with the kids. And so the VR simulation was a plank. So you took an elevator, you're wearing the headset, so it's 3D. You take an elevator to the top, and then you walk out onto a plank. And the plank is like 100 floors in the air. And you're walking on this plank, and you can look down and see the ground and see the sky. And so, you know, none of the moms would do it. One of them actually got down on her hands and knees, and she's literally crawling on this floor in this basement, terrified out of her mind. Another mom wouldn't get out of the elevator. And so I went and I walked, and it was terrifying. And you feel like your body thinks that you're above, like 100 floors above the street. And so I was able to say, no, I'm not. I'm in a VR, I'm in a basement in, you know, Calgary, Alberta. And so I said to my, I kind of thought, what can help me understand that I'm safe here to do this challenge? And so I gingerly, ever so gingerly, slid my foot over the edge of the plank, which should have been air. And it was, there was ground there. And then I was like, oh, yep, I'm good. And so I walked to the end of the plank and I jumped, because that was the point. You jump off the plank, which is somewhat terrifying, but nobody else jumped off the plank. And so I think that if we channel this physical ability or just use our brain to find some tangible way to prove that we're actually going to be physically safe, then we can make more risks and think about what's the downside.
So we need to put our foot over the plank, make sure there's ground there, because there usually is ground there.
That's my thing. Yeah.
So really it's, we're fighting with our brains, like, because we, it's that fear factor, right? And it affects us physically and mentally. So it's the whole brain body thing that's going on. So I find that fascinating. So in your work, and I want to get back to your book. I didn't realize you were writing a book. Is it, is it written? Are you close to publishing or?
Well, in my typical style, I wrote it in COVID without really any thought about what the next step was. So I've kind of finished it. It's in, I've had it edited through with an editor, and now I'm kind of deciding that what I'm going to do is release the chapter one and see what people say. And then the next step is to find a publisher or publish it or whatever. I take the steps as they come. Sometimes I'm not, that's one of my, actually my struggles. And that's one of the things that we all have things that hold us back a little bit. And one of the things I struggle with is planning and specifically steps of execution. So that's what I'm working with now.
So I'd love to take you back just a little bit. You were working with a coach and you were thinking about public speaking and because you love speaking. How did you get to creativity, because that's really your focus, right? How did you get there?
Yeah, that's interesting, because when I first decided I wanted to do public speaking, I thought I should probably speak to vets because I'm a vet. So it makes sense that I would speak to other veterinarians. Well, what could I speak to them about? I could speak to them about being a locum and a part-time, like a contract worker, or hiring a locum and making that successful, because that was also what my business is kind of focused around. And then for kind of the first, I think the other businesses helped me really think about, well, what's the market for that? And who's willing to pay me for that? And how many people want to hear that message? And it really wasn't a big enough market. And it wasn't something I was excited enough about. It was just one of those like, well, it makes sense for me to do that, so I probably should. And I think that for one of the first times, I actually sat with that and I tried to go deeper. And I listened to a podcast and it was about how do you choose what you want to speak about, essentially. And the advice from the podcaster was talk about something people always ask you about. Because if people always ask you about that, that's probably something unique about you. And I thought, well, everybody always asks me, how did you do that? And how did you do this? And how did you do the other thing? You know, like, you know, scuba diving, rock climbing, stand-up comedy, you know, and backpacking for 14 months. And so as a researcher, I started researching this and the stand-up comedy and the creativity were obviously linked. And so I started researching, well, what is creativity and what does it mean to do something different and to step into the unknown and to face uncertainty and a little bit of risk? Because I'm not a physical risk taker so much, I don't think. And so that what fascinated me was this kind of marriage of creativity and facing risk, because every time you do anything creative, if it's like baking a cake, you don't know how it's going to turn out. Creativity is the fundamental boot camp for facing uncertainty and being willing to fail and knowing that it's going to work out and that you can move on.
I'm interested in your being willing to fail because, you know, you've described yourself as you take steps as they come, not really planning things out. So you must have experienced some setbacks and some failure. And how have you built resiliency around that?
Mm-hmm. Well, my position is you get good at something by doing it. So to get good at failure and to become resilient in failure, you have to do it. So, you know, stand-up comedy is a perfect example. I mean, you're practicing a craft 5 minutes at a time. And in my case, like once, a couple of times a month, because I don't want to live in a, you know, in a club 5 nights a week. So to get good at failure and to become resilient in the face of failure, you have to be willing to really suck at something, I think.
And what's your self-talk? Because you talked about this little voice in your head and how it guides you about, you know, you can't do that. So when you have failed or experienced failure, what's your little voice telling you?
Well, I think it's probably telling me, like everybody else, like, you suck, you shouldn't do this, you're not good enough. You know, that's still, I still have the same voice. And it still hurts. Like, for an example, I did a stand-up very early in my stand-up career. And I hosted a charity event for an organization. And I had to, it's kind of a long story. The first set went okay. And then the second set, I was supposed to introduce the other comedians. And I had never hosted before. I didn't do a very good job. And I completely bombed. Like, people were taking photos of themselves with their backs to my performance. Oh. Like, they were, you know, they were completely ignoring me. And I left. And I felt deflated. I didn't want to ever do comedy again. I felt like I was a failure and I felt like people were judging me. And then I think what happens is that after sitting in that, you think, okay, one of the things that helps me is say, well, if I was in the audience and I wasn't really paying attention to that person, I probably wouldn't remember it the next day, or I certainly wouldn't remember their name. So I try to put myself in the position of somebody else, or in the case of somebody who's judging. I'm like, well, I wouldn't judge me for that. I would be much more compassionate. And I think what drives me is to think, like, I could give up. And especially if you get, as a public speaker, you know, you get sometimes some harsh criticism, sometimes very personal attacks, very rarely, but people sometimes feel like an anonymous feedback is a forum to air their grievances or whatever. But then they win. If I'm going to stop doing this because somebody doesn't like what I'm doing, if there's like 99% of the other people who like it or find value in it, then I can't listen to that one person. And to the point where I have color coded my feedback forms before, because I find that I focus only on the negative. And so if I say, okay, well, let me like color code, put the really, really bad ones in red and the neutral ones in yellow and the really good ones in green. And then I can actually visually see, like, well, there's only two people out of like 300. And so I just try to put it into perspective, I guess.
I think that's such a great idea. That is a great idea, to color code feedback. So you are an upcoming author. You're writing a book. You do stand-up comedy. And I don't know if COVID has probably had some impact on that. And you're a public speaker, and probably COVID has had an impact on that as well. And you're also a practicing veterinarian. So you're wearing quite a few hats, Carolyn. where do you find the energy to do all of those things?
Oh, that's a good question. Sometimes I don't have the energy to do all of those things. So that's why I don't do comedy 5 nights a week, you know, when before COVID. And during COVID, some other comedians are doing Zoom comedy and those types of things. And I have had no real interest in doing it, because I like doing stand-up comedy, but I don't have the interest in putting in the 20,000 hours or whatever to try to become, you know, an HBO comedian. Mostly I do comedy because I enjoy it. It's fun. It's creative. It's challenging. But also I feel like if I'm up there telling jokes and I'm a middle-aged mom veterinarian, then maybe there's somebody in the audience that's saying, wow, she can do that. Then maybe I can do that thing that I'm scared of doing as well. So that's also what drives me to do those types of things. So that's maybe where I get my energy from, is seeing people and seeing the transformation when I see people who are scared of doing something. And then, you know, I'm up there doing stand-up comedy. I'm like, well, if I can do that, you can do whatever the small thing is you want to do. And then when they feel like empowered and they feel that, give them that energy to make that change and to see the change in them, to see how happy it makes them and how empowered that they have some control over the change in their life, I think that gives me energy.
I love that. What's next for you?
You know, I remember reading Arlene Dickinson's book, and in there she talks about the 5-year plan and how it's dumb. And I was like, finally, because I have no idea what's next for me, I guess, is this book. And as Peggy, you mentioned, I COVID has put a bit of a dent in public speaking, although it's given many opportunities for me to, and Betty Ann on your other podcast guest had mentioned this, to attend amazing talks that I never would have been able to go to otherwise. And so I'm able to reach audiences and people that I otherwise would never be able to connect with. So that's been a real blessing. So I think right now I'm focused on my book and just, you know, connecting with the people who might find my message helpful and connecting with the people that might be helpful to me in my journey. It's as simple as that, really.
So I'm dying to ask this. It's one of those questions I always tell Catherine after we've finished with the podcast. Why didn't I ask this question? And this is going to be coming out of left field. Do you have to believe you're funny to be a stand-up comedian?
Not at all. In fact, a lot of the comedians I meet are not funny in like regular life. They're quiet, introverted. It's very much... it's a skill. It's a practice like anything else. I think you have to be able to get up there and not care, which is why it's to me one of the pinnacles of not giving a flying fox about what anybody thinks about you. If you can get up on stage by yourself and tell jokes and think, well, I'd rather be up here bombing on stage than sitting in the audience wishing I could do this someday. Right.
It must be freeing to have that approach.
It is. I mean, I don't always feel that way, but that's what I tell myself. And I just, you know, that's what I have to tell myself to get on stage, because otherwise, if you think too much about it, but it is, it's very liberating and it's very challenging and difficult to really not care, because of course you care. I wouldn't be telling jokes if I didn't care. I want people to laugh. I want people to enjoy it. So it's potentially this almost juxtaposition of caring so much about what people think, but also not caring at all.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So you had a fascinating life, careers, experiences. If you were to share some insights on how do you do the things you do, what would those insights be?
I think sometimes I have a visual of a field of doors, like where the doors are in concentric circles, and I just walk through a door. And then there's another series of like 50 doors in front of me. And I think of life as just a series of continually walking through those doors. And some of the doors are not going to be nice doors. Some of them are going to be great, but I would rather walk through them than to stay in the same place for my entire life. So I think embracing the idea that not every decision is going to be a good one, but knowing that that's okay as well. And for me, what works is the mental, I guess it's self-talk around what are the downsides and risk mitigation. And at the end of the day, if I am not going to die, then really everything else is manageable.
What's the worst that can happen?
What's the worst that can happen? Exactly.
Well, you've given me some real, I'm thinking about what it would be like to stand up on a stage. Just,
oh, Peggy, oh, you're going to do it. I can tell it.
God, for me, that would be the epitome of risk. So you've really given me some food for thought. Thank you so much.
It's funny. Yeah, it's funny because I actually took a group of women business leaders in Calgary before COVID when we could do in-person events, and I didn't tell them what they were going to do. I said, I'm going to make you uncomfortable. And a lot of my talks, I say, I'm going to make you uncomfortable. I don't promise it'll be comfortable, but I promise it'll be fun. And I made this group of women write and tell a joke to each other, and they all did it. So, and they all loved it. They were all very happy that they did it.
So I'm curious why it's important to feel uncomfortable. Why do you do that?
Well, because if you're not uncomfortable, you're not growing. I mean, if you're comfortable, it's because you're not really challenging yourself. And even from a physical or neurologic perspective, if you're not doing new things or uncomfortable, your brain is actually probably shrinking. It's definitely not growing. So mm-hmm. if you want to have an active brain that works well into old age, you need to be used to putting yourself in uncomfortable positions where you're doing new things. Otherwise, your brain won't grow.
Fascinating. Well, this has been really interesting. Thank you so much. And so many insights that I'm not sure I'm going to get into improv comedy either, because you do, I think, have to be a little bit funny.
Well, I mean, it's different for everybody, right? Like Peggy seems a little bit more intrigued about the idea than you, Catherine, but maybe for you it's something like trying a different type of food you've never tried before, or it's about picking up an instrument, or everybody has their own unique way of expressing their creativity, and it's important to honor that, I think. So
true. Thank you so much.
Thank you. This is so much fun.
Thanks, Carol. And maybe I'll see you up on stage someday.
Yes, definitely. I'm going to hold you to that.
Okay.
If you've learned just one thing about change while listening to this podcast, please subscribe on Apple or Spotify and share with a friend. This episode recorded via Zoom audio. Producers Peggy Koenig and Catherine Greiba. Executive Producer, Koenig Leadership Advisory. Theme music, La Pompeii, written by Chris Harrington, music publisher, Invato Market. For information on this podcast and to purchase some fabulous goat merchandise, please visit www.getyourgoat.ca.